Welcome back, everyone, and welcome to the show. And today we've got Chris Turner. Chris, mate, thank you for coming on.
Oh, it's great to speak to you, Pete. Thanks for having me on, mate. I appreciate it.
No worries. I appreciate you taking the time. And you've just bought out, or it's just been put out now, Alien Reptilian Legacy, also known as Don't Mention the Reptilians. We'll go into that, but do you want to give people a little bit of a background on who you are and how you got into doing this? But we'll just go into who you are first.
Well, I got into the sort of, we call it, it goes by numerous names, doesn't it? The truth movement or the alternative scene, probably about eight or nine years ago. And by chance, I was working in media. I was an editor. And I bumped into a guy and we got talking about the strangest, some conspiracy. And from that moment on, I started doing research into that. And along the way, I had been doing work for the BBC, and ITV and Sky One as a visual effects artist. But I was sort of falling out with it. Once you learn sort of what's going on behind the scenes, life changes, doesn't it? It's sort of your although it's your occupation and you're dependent on what you're earning, the sort of what's really going on behind the scenes and the truth sort of took over things. And I just got into and was asked by a friend, you know, we should really do maybe a documentary about what's going on. So we started off just doing bits of videos about the New World Order, really. Much like many people get into this sort of area through the New World Order or something similar. It might be politics, it might be corruption, it might be something in the media. Just something. And then we all know where that path leads. Well, I didn't know at the time, but I know now. So, that's really how I got into the alternative scene, and I've been in it now for about 8 years, on and off.
Did you have any experience or anything that sort of jolted that interest into the truth movement and that sort of thing? Was that, or just a knowingness that there was more to life than just what we, you know, what we see or what we think about? In terms of, you know, did you ever think about the paranormal or UFOs or anything else?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I listen to a lot of these radio shows, and I think it's one of the things that you hear a lot is that question, how did you get into it? And often people say, I've always been into it. And when I hear that, I just think, oh, yeah, well, that's someone else that's always been into it. But the question for me has always been, why are we into it? Because I've not had any experiences other than the experience that I've talked about. We can talk about that after, if you like, about when I got back from David Icke's place. We visited David on the Isle of Wight, and I returned home and had a bit of a strange experience. But in my childhood, no, nothing like that. But yeah, always, like many other people, been interested, and probably I've known for whatever reason, and I don't know what that is. What is that knowing where people seem to just know that something is not right? Mm-hmm. And that's all I can explain it as, Pete, really, to be honest. Yeah.
No, and you know, that's the case with a lot of people I've spoken to is this. There's always been an interest. They don't know why they've had the interest. And there's knowing that more to life than what they have, you know, they just know that little inkling just going, there's more to life than this. So that doesn't surprise me that, and you're not alone with that in saying that. So, you know, there's a lot of people out there with you that's why they're listening to these shows and going to talks and buying books because they're trying to learn and see what connects with them and that thirst for knowledge in this field, I guess.
Yeah, it's a really strange thing. And I mean, the reptilian thing that where we're at now, it doesn't really get much deeper than that, you know. Alien, in the end, when it boils down to it, aliens and or interdimensionals, the whole picture, when you're coming from a corrupt politician angle or a George Orwell book or a 1984 sort of totalitarian world order sort of, and then you get down the hall and you find out this is what's waiting. It's just the last thing that you expect. But even now, it doesn't seem that strange. It doesn't, and I've always been like that. When I remember seeing David Icke 20 years ago on a TV show here in the UK, and even when he said it, despite the audience laughing and even the presenter, you know, you get the eyebrow, the presenter's eyebrow goes up. And I just thought, I didn't think, oh, that's strange, that's weird, he's crazy. I didn't think anything about it. And I'm really interested as to why people think the way that they do, and the programs that they're running that make them think that way. And that's something that that's a project that I look forward to doing in the future. Actually, something about that.
And that'll be interesting. I'll be interested to see into that as well, because it is something that I've thought about as well. Even though knowing and experiencing what I have, these programs that people have got running, that whether it's just blind belief, you know, not knowing but blind belief, or whether it's because, you know, the herd mentality, the sheep mentality, yeah, you know, sheeple, there's a lot of different things to it. So that will be interesting. But getting onto the reptilian thing now, how did you decide, or what sparked your interest to go from, I guess, the New World Order type movies that you're doing, or whatever you're doing on that side of things? How did you jump from there to going, all right, I'm going to do something on reptilians?
Well, I think it came from, I'd met David Icke a couple of times and interviewed him. And even though we hadn't gone to David's place to do an interview about the reptilians, we were talking purely about politics and the mainstream sort of truth movement. He always just sort of went off on this tangent about the archons and the reptilian sort of mind. And I used to end up with hours of footage that I couldn't use. You know, I watched it back, and I was thinking, you know, and of course it's sort of all the time that this is going on, and you're producing these films, and you're talking about this dark conspiracy, you do pretty quick, you come to the conclusion that this is not about money, you know, and the power doesn't come from having money either. You know, I think it's really, that conclusion dawned on me really fast. So I think the reptilian thing then, having sort of, you know, seen some of Stuart Swerdlaw's stuff as well, that's, you know, years back this, and it must have just stayed, you know, sort of stuff stays with you, doesn't it, over time. And from there, I just thought, you know, we're going to have to do something about it. Someone's going to have to do a documentary just tackling this specifically. Now, I know Ancient Aliens had done something in one of their programs about the reptilians, but I'm a fan of Ancient Aliens, don't get me wrong. I like what they do, but given the $60,000 to $100,000 it is per episode, I think they could have done a little bit more. But given their position in the mainstream, I think they probably said as much as they were going to say about what, you know, the reptilians, so to speak, or the negative side of the reptilians story. So that's really how we got into on this path of doing the reptilian stuff. And I've said it before, had I have known where this was going and how much work and how much research and how many angles there are to this reptilian story, maybe I probably wouldn't have taken it on. Or, you know, not just me and Daniel Rogerson, who's made the film with me. We probably would have got a team on this in hindsight. But no, in the end, it's been, I think the work that we're doing is sort of being really well received. So that's sort of like the payoff, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's what it's about, getting it out. And it is being well received. I've actually had a couple of people contact me saying that I'm going to be pleased with it. So I haven't been able to see it yet, but that's good feedback as well, that a few people have seen it and they said, you know, it's an awesome movie, and you'll be happy to see the end result when they've spoken to me. So that's, you know, that's pretty good comments.
Yeah, I mean, it's awkward. I mean, having your own sort of work reviewed and sort of, I mean, you can imagine, I'll be like you get a lot of emails about a lot of people that don't necessarily appreciate the stance that you're taking.
Yeah.
I've always said that this is sort of a trilogy and beyond. So I can't cover all the areas at once, you know, just because in part one we're sort of doing the Reptilian 101, if you like.
Yep.
And a lot of it is about plain experiences, people's experiences, yourself included in that. Some of those experiences are quite negative. Some of them are just experiences. Didn't seem to be any agenda at that time anyway, and some of them are quite benevolent experiences as well. So we get into a lot of the benevolent stuff sort of around part three, But of course, that brief's still being written for three. We're in production with part two now. And a lot of the people from part one are in part two and three, but we've also got some new people in part two and three as well. But watching and reading reviews of your work, even just comments that I get sent, it's quite difficult, isn't it? Sort of to hear people's sort of opinions on you, and then you get accused of being Illuminati, and then you get accused of being you work for that agenda, or you're putting forth, you're promoting fear propaganda. It's just something that you've got to really grow a thick skin with it. And I'm always, I always accept it and try to be pleasant and respectful about what I say and what I post. And a lot of the time people ask me for opinions on people as well, which is always an awkward area. I mean, if you've never met anybody, they'll say, why haven't you got such a body in the film? And that might be someone that I've contacted that doesn't want to be in the film. And we might have had a discussion, and I can't necessarily say why somebody doesn't want to be in the film. He just doesn't want to be in the film. Now, I'm not going to name names, but that's happened.
Yeah.
We sort of contact people, and you're thinking, it'd be great if this guy would be in the film. But he's got his own reasons why he doesn't want to be in the film. And they're sort of looking at you and saying, well, if you're not having him in the film, then you have got an agenda. There's some, why are you not letting him be in the film? It's like, if they sort of understood the politics of producing, and you know it works, you're sort of contacting people and you're trying to, and a lot of the time you're trying to gain trust in this movement as well, which is a thing that I guess that comes in time, because despite your intentions, no matter how sort of truthful you try to be, how sincere you try to be, if that person doesn't know you or doesn't trust you, and you can't develop that relationship and make it work, then I guess in time you just got to hope that in part two or three maybe some researchers will appear. So it's been an interesting 2 years anyway, let's say that.
It has been a couple of years that you've been into this now. How did you decide, you did mention it a little bit then, but how did you sort of start to nitpick who you're going to have in the documentary? Like, was it just through the research and names you came across that you thought, all right, I'll pick these people, or how did you go about it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, people will probably look at the reptilian stuff now if you went onto YouTube, say, for example, which is one of the most popular media sites now. And there's quite a lot of reptilian stuff up there. But 2-3 years ago, there wasn't. It seems to have gained us some serious momentum.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think that's something to do with me, but I don't think it is. But you know what I mean? It does seem to be a lot more popular now than it was. But back when we first started researching this film, it was through mainly David Icke's books that we would look in the index and look who he was researching through. By writing his books, and the researchers and the authors that he was, and the material that he was looking at, we were doing the same. We were sort of going to the source, so to speak, and those are the sort of people that we went to directly. And I think they were a little bit, they were very cautious, even about contacting, they just didn't, they would just send back a short email. Sorry, appreciate the contact, not interested. And that happened a few times. And then, of course, YouTube, you're on YouTube watching a lot of it, listening to a lot of radio interviews and videos, and just coming across names and stuff that I guess resonated with, because often with a film, you'll sort of have an idea where you want to take a project. You'll write a brief and you know which direction you're going to go in. There's only one direction sometimes that a project can go in, where with this, it was random. And I learned sort of when a name got thrown at me, rather than feel it out myself and saying, what do I think personally about this guy? What do I think about his work? How does it feel? How do I feel about it? You've just got to let that go as a producer anyway, so that you can get balance and so that you can let a project decide where it wants to go. Give it a life of its own. And all right, the end product might not necessarily be what you thought it would. or it might not be as sensationalist as some people want it to be, which is what I found with the reptilian stuff. People want this, for want of a better word, I think Hollywood is really responsible for the manipulation of what we expect out of the reptilian documentaries and films and research. For whatever reason, we want this dark force manipulating us. We want it to be that and only that. And I was like that at the start. At the start, I firmly believed, and I still do now, that they're behind the scenes manipulating that, and someone's manipulating them, of course, the Archons, or whatever name you want to get, whatever consciousness you want to give that. I mean, that's where we're sort of at the moment. I mean, it's a very, that's a very popular idea that's going about that. And people send me emails, oh, so you're saying that it's not the reptilians, someone, they're being puppeteered, so you're giving them an out. you know, they're just another puppet in the game. And that's not what we're saying. Mm-hmm. You know, we're saying that that's happening, but you'll know yourself through your own experiences how that works, how the manipulation works. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who were into the reptilian subject were like me. We were on the fringe of it. We looked at it from the outside looking in. It looked like a very simple agenda, a negative agenda, and it was sort of a covert invasion, wasn't it, mm-hmm. of the mind. It was a covert inversion of consciousness, basically. That's what it appeared to be. But it's much more than that. So that's really where we're at now with it. But trying to get that across in a 90-minute film
is hard. Yeah,
that it really isn't going to happen, because without putting the foundations down, you know. And I thought at first, actually, when the distributor said, "Oh, you can't have the 5-hour film," that's just not possible on the streaming sites. You can have 90 minutes. I thought, well, 90 minutes, I can still do something with that, but we're going to have to do a few parts. But I was surprised how fast 90 minutes get sucked up when, you know, when people are talking about experiences. And that's one of the things that I wanted to do with the film, is not just have researchers out there, have people in it who experiences it, why I contacted yourself. Because it's not, you know, it's no use me rattling on about someone else's experiences, because it's just not authentic enough.
Yeah.
And it's not truthful, actually. Because a lot of this movement, particularly the reptilian stuff, is Chinese whispers, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of he said, she said, and then this whole, the whole story just gets warped and changed. So that was really one of the tricky parts of, and is one of the tricky parts of producing a film like this on a subject like reptilians.
Yeah, I think a lot of people get scared that they're going to be edited in such a way in some documentaries, mainstream, in such a way where the truth's manipulated from them. And with you, that wasn't the case. And that's why when we first hooked up, one of my first questions to you is, if I remember correctly, I think it was, is this taking you in areas you thought weren't even where you were at the start, in terms of took you, you let the investigation take you on a ride, not you have your preconceived notion. And when I got that response from you saying that it had, I was like, this is someone I can work with, because you didn't have a preconceived notion. You knew there was people experiencing this and everything else, but you were letting it drag you where the evidence and the investigation led you. And that's where you get balance in journalism, if people do that, unless you're a mainstream TV, and then a lot of the time there's something going on. So it was refreshing for me when I talked to you, go, you know, this is awesome, because it's not always like that. And I've worked with mainstream, and you can see how things can be edited to a point where it completely gets blown out of proportion. So I can understand, especially people who are experiences being a bit iffy, because I know of people's lives that have been ruined and they've had to move their kids from certain schools, and I could understand that, which, you know, it's great to see the way you've done it. What we'll do now, do you want to give everyone just a brief overview of who's in the documentary, if you can?
Yeah, sure. Well, the obvious choice for the first name that always comes up is David Icke. So David Icke was sort of the first person that we contacted, because I think at the time we felt that if we couldn't get David on board, there would be no film. That was sort of, you know, looking at it now, that's not necessarily, I wouldn't have been the case, but David certainly is like a fundamental part of the film, which people would expect. given the research and the time and effort that David's put in over the years and the sacrifices that he's made, you know, it would have been rude not to. Mm-hmm. Let's say that. And as soon as I contacted David about this, he just said, "Sounds great, mate. Yeah, just great. Come over and we'll do the interview." So the thing is with David, you just get so much more than you expect. I mean, like I said, 90 minutes. David eats that 90. You know, you've seen David speak. David eats that 90
minutes. 10-hour talks.
Yeah, just, I mean, you ask one question and he's answering. I'm sort of sat over the questions and answered it. And he sort of goes through, because he's done it, he's been doing it so long that he knows the next question. And also that realisation that he knew the next question made me think, well, all right, I'm not doing enough here. I'm obviously not asking the questions, the right questions, because he has already got the answers. So I need to be asking questions that people haven't got the answers to, perhaps. So that's sort of where, from David Icke, we got onto Ellis Taylor's work. I mean, I know you know Ellis very well. Mm-hmm. So Ellis is sort of been around the scene and has known David Icke actually. And they used to correspond years ago, like, you know, over a decade ago. And they would send information back and forth. And Ellis just sort of goes under the radar, doesn't he? Ellis is an experienced...
I'm getting a weird metallic noise, like a distortion on the mic now coming through on your end. As soon as you started talking about Ellis...
Oh, well, that sounds about right then, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Is that any better?
It's still going. It's still happening.
That's still happening?
Yeah.
Yeah. One second. Still there?
Still there.
Still there. All right, okay, that's odd. Well, actually, mentioning Ellis's name, no, it's not that odd. How about that one? Is that any better?
It's still doing it. I've never had this happen. This is weird. Right.
Okay.
There was something happened then.
It's still there.
It's a little bit better.
One second. I've not done anything different.
Yeah, I know. What I might do is pause it here quickly and ring you back and see if we've got a difference.
Sure. Okay, man.
All right, we'll do that. Cool.
Yeah. Cool.
Here we go. We're back again. That's a lot clearer. So sorry about that.
No, my God. Yeah, but I mean, strange that that happens. Ellis, we were just talking about Ellis there. Ellis doesn't really like the limelight, and I can understand it given what he's been through and the experiences that he's had. And a lot of people, Ellis is another researcher that, because he looks at a lot of the darker stuff and exposes a lot of the darker stuff, and it's not just reptilian stuff. In fact, a lot of it is not reptilian stuff at all. Yeah. A lot of it is sort of undercurrent of Ellis calls it the invisible darkness, you know, sort of that force that's operating behind the scenes. And when you look at Ellis's research, that as well, it just resonated. And once I'd emailed Ellis, I think Ellis was one of those guys that was also wary of, you know, who is this guy? I think Ellis, like you, he's been misrepresented at times, misquoted, I would say, as well. But once we made contact and we met up, that went really well, because Ellis's research is, and Ellis's experiences are somewhat different than a lot of the people, because Ellis gets a lot of past life stuff as well, doesn't he? He remembers a lot of his past life stuff and like parallel existences and a lot of multi-dimensional stuff, if you like. He sees a lot of different phenomena as well, and experiences a lot of different phenomena. And in fact, the morning that we got Ellis to come up on the train, and we met him in Manchester to do the interview, and I met him at the hotel, and I knocked on the door, and he opened the door, and he just said, "Mate, oh, I've had an awful night." And he had had an experience that evening, telling him not to do the interview. This sort of voice telling him, "Don't do it. Don't do the. Don't, you know." Now, we never really talked much about that, what that was about, but that's sort of been the thread with Ellis. We've moved on with Ellis Taylor. We're doing a biography as well. I'm doing a separate.
I'm glad you're doing that, because that needed to be done, because I reckon he's one of the most in-depth researchers, and he can see so much more stuff in something. Somebody will cover a subject and you think it's finished. Ellis will do that and double it. Like, in terms of, he will find more stuff in that situation or experience or information, and you'll find it, you know, more and more. And the way he describes his experiences, to me, just rings true straight away, because he will go from one situation and all of a sudden, now I'm here and this is happening. But people are like, what happened between here and here? And it's like, well, nothing. This is what happened. It went from there to there. That was what happened.
Yeah.
And because people aren't experiences so much where they have recall or they realize that they're experienced, because I believe everyone is, to them that doesn't make sense. But because I've experienced it and I hear Ellis describe what he's gone through, I'm like, well, this just sounds very similar to what I've experienced. So I understand the high strangeness or the weirdness of the experience.
Yeah, it's really odd. And actually, because we decided to do that biography, we meet up, you know, last year we met up a lot doing some filming when the weather was nice here. And again, he would go home after the day's shoot. He would go home, and I think one evening he had a black Mercedes parked outside of the house with the lights on all night. You know, this is a quaint little village in, you know, near the Cotswolds, and this big dark Merc's parked up all night with the lights on the house. So that's sort of the thing. Whenever we meet up, and emails go missing with us, you probably experienced that yourself. A lot of the contacts that we have goes missing. Phone calls don't, you know, messages don't arrive. And with Ellis, that's sort of, straight away, you know that something's weird, and you know you're onto something when you get in that experience. But making that biography with Ellis, because his experiences jump from one event to another random event that seemingly have no correlation or no connection, it seems to us, we're sort of looking at that going, well, as an editor, I'm like, how on earth am I going to make this linear and make this work in a timeline from A to B? And I soon realised that I'm just not going to be able to
you
do
can't.
That. It's all over the place.
Yeah.
But at the same time, fascinating, the stories that Ellis has got and the experiences that he's had are just... I knew that someone would have to make this film, and I knew it would be a difficult film to make. But anyway, that's sort of a side project from the reptilian thing. I mean, in the reptilian thing, the next name really that you come across is James Bartley. I don't think anyone's really done, in terms of lecturing on the reptilians, aside from Stuart Swerdlaw, probably James Bartley is probably the go-to guy, and he's been doing this over 20 years, much like probably a similar time to David Icke, actually. And he's really in-depth and really thorough. He's got sort of like a military background as well, so to speak, in sort of communications. And he's an experiencer himself, and he's had experiences with the reptilians, which, for me, that's why I got in touch with you. If you've had those experiences and you can talk about those, you might not necessarily be able to give any background or reason as to why those experiences are happening at that time. Well, James is a little bit different. He sort of knows a lot about his experiences and has looked very deep into his experiences, and he's quite vocal about it as well. And he's another guy that gets a little bit of bad press about being a bit of a fearmonger, but ultimately, he's talking about his experiences. He doesn't deny that there's a very benevolent side to this whole agenda. Not at all. He just chooses, because of his own experiences, to sort of deal with that stuff first. And he's one, or he was one, of a handful of guys doing that. So to make a reptilian film, a film about the reptilian agenda, I mean, the reptilian agenda now, the name of it is sort of... I don't know whether that fits now, if you like, because it's more than reptilians.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it would have been easier to keep it. You could keep it. You could easily make a very sensationalized version of a reptilian documentary. You could. You could just fire out a lot of negative stuff, and it would probably do very well, but that's not really what I'm about. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think those areas do need to be looked into, and you need researchers like James and researchers like Eve Logan, who's coming up in part two, who's a friend of James's, who look into sort of the love bite, you know, the relationship manipulation stuff, twin flame stuff,
mm-hmm.
that's important, what's going on behind the scenes, which sort of veers away from, not doesn't it's still reptilian related, but it delves into other areas, deeper areas, which are really key to this anyway, which we're only just beginning to understand, and which a lot of the fringe researchers of in reptilian research probably have no knowledge of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not everybody, I'm just saying sort of the guys on the fringe that look at this and say, you know, oh, it's the reptilians, like a 1980s V, the TV show. That's what it is, but it's just not as literal, you know. So in bringing James on board, that's what we wanted to do with that. And James is sort of, again, he's sort of really a he will be in the documentaries throughout. And then from James, we went on to, what I was keen to do is, through YouTube, you come across a lot of people that are having experiences and have done research and have got books out and have got sort of a profile. But I wanted to, there was a couple of guys out there with no profile on YouTube that were doing stuff about the shape-shifting thing. Now, that's a really strange, I don't know what your thoughts are on that, Pete, but the whole shape-shifting phenomenon, is what it's led to is a separate documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Because that area itself is very little actually is known about it. I mean, from a researcher's standpoint, I mean, and there was a guy called Richard Bruce that was looking into video analysis of shapeshifting. What was actually going on when he was seen to be capturing people shifting on screen, whether that be strange growths in the skin or fingers morphing together or, you know, the usual eye slit.
Mm.
And I would look at this stuff and a lot of it, 99% of it, you can look at and say, you know, I've got a video editing background.
Cameras, pixels, yeah. Lighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a whole load of stuff. I mean, probably much like ufology in general, there's a lot of genuine explanations for seeing craft, but there's that percentage that you can't explain. And that's the same for the shape-shifting. We don't know what it is. What I do know and what I was happy to find out is that people like Ellis were saying, Chris, yeah, this is a real phenomenon. I have seen it. Have you ever seen anything like that, Pete?
Yeah, I've had a few experiences with it and people have seen me do it as well.
Right.
But they've said my eyes are gone completely blue.
Right, okay.
Like, there's one story I can tell you where I was doing a talk in Queensland a couple of years ago. And apparently, I can't remember this, but it was early in the night, and a bloke who was actually a security guard, but he was there at the talk before the Skywatch, walked into a room, and I looked up at him apparently with a look like, I don't know, it was almost like, you're never going to forget this sort of, and my eyes were blue, and apparently he walked out, and he came up to me at the end of the night, and he said, do you know that your eyes go completely blue? And he looked like he was, like, freaking out even talking to me. And I'm like, well, I have had that told to me before, because the night before, Lauren Kurth told me that that had happened at her house while I was having dinner with her family.
Right.
So I've had stories about that with me. I have seen, like, even when in my younger years, I would see greys, but they were white. And they work for what I know is, like, a type of council. Of a collective, like the overall collective. They're borderline on everything because they are part of everything. But I would see one of them phase in and out between Kurt Cobain and its true nature, because I was into Nirvana at really young age because my brother played it, and I loved listening to it. There's lots of stuff I've experienced like that, so I've seen that myself. And I think majorly with it, there is a conscious component. But then you may have things like the Skinwalker Ranch case over in America where I can't tell if the beings are physically changing shape or it's projected into your mind's eye to see that. But then I've seen crafts do some really weird stuff. I've seen crafts split up into balls and turn into one ball and then shape-shift into a tri. I've seen crafts like I filmed an object the other day that's gone up and I knew people were going to think it was foil. My whole family was there. I went to Albury, my hometown, called out my family, and there's this object that would start off here, fly here, and straight away it would appear here again. And it would fly. It went over two, three suburbs, actually, doing crazy maneuvers. And when I zoomed up on it, it looked like a sheet foil the size of a car. It would have had to have been. My brother, who's skeptical, very skeptical, he's an experiencer, but he's very skeptical, very analytical, said that's probably the best sighting he's ever had, and it just literally looked like foil. And Sol termed it the origami UFO because it was doing crazy stuff. It looks like it's like a leaf or something in the air, but this thing, what you can't see in it because I'm zoomed up in 4K, is this thing's going over suburbs. And in the end, which is not on footage, a part of it was, but I didn't put it up, was it went straight, did a 90-degree angle, went north, and then shot up vertically and disappeared. Now, this is where I love talking to Ellis and other people and about the shape-shifting side of things, because people want sources, and I filmed a saucer the other day, and my partner saw it in the backyard, but a lot of this is not nuts and bolts. It can create or put on an appearance or a persona of whatever it wants to. And I think now we're starting to come more and more to the real profound nature of what's going on in terms of, you know, years ago in the late 1800s, we saw sky ships. And then it went to flying saucers and balls of light. And now we're getting weird plasma and organic and tripped out things that look like, whether it's sheets of foil or newspapers, weird things that you just can't fathom unless you see it. And that's why I was happy putting up that video, though I'm getting ridiculed for it, because that's what I saw. That's the truth of it. I know what I saw. And it's, you know, the show, this is weird. And that's why it's very interesting you're doing a video on the subject of shape-shifting, because I don't think many people have really tackled it, if any at all, in a way that I think you will in terms of doing a specific documentary on it.
I think it's such I think I said it before, if you type shapeshifting into any forum, you're going to get World War III. Just watch that. That argument will run and run. And because we don't understand, much like most of this, actually, because we don't understand and we won't actually acknowledge, some people won't acknowledge, we don't understand it. Just say you don't understand it and then have another look at it. Rather than trying to just say, no, that's not real, and trying to give like a mainstream science, yes, take that approach first. Yeah. By all means, take the mainstream science approach. What is physically, like you've said, is this physical? Is it DNA? Are we tapping into DNA and something's happening physically? Is it in the mind? Or is it something else? Is this technology even? Is this like, you know, you've probably heard it, the whole hologram. I get a lot of emails about, have you looked into, you know, a lot of reptilians have been seen with certain devices, or like, for want of a better word, utility belts or wands with blue lights that allow them to do various things, and shape-shifting is one of these things. Are they using technology to do it? Are they using holographic technology as a disguise? Or the darker side of that shape-shifting area is sort of like Dell's and the David Icke satanic sort of route, where they're actually taking and using the blood in the rituals. Now, that's a very dark area to look at, but we couldn't really make the film without looking into that, because that sort of, I don't know whether you want it, we can go into that too much, but the darker side of the massive paedophilia rings now that are going around, it's absolutely everywhere. And we know that here in the UK, I believe there's something like 130 sex offenders on MPs that are still in work. I mean, what you, and then you look and you listen to the witness accounts, and then you've got the famous UK case of the Savile, and how many more behind him and his connections to the royals. All right, nobody probably knows definitively what is going on, but we do know that something very sinister is going on, and it certainly isn't purely about adults liking children. It's something much deeper than that, and that's not me saying it, because I've researched it. Yes, I've spoke to researchers and experiences that have looked at this. This is direct from the children themselves, and the people that have been abused in this manner. So and then there's all the stuff in the cults that talk about all very similar stuff. So that whole shape-shifting thing, it's a real like mixing pot of all areas that are sort of, at first glance, you're just looking at it, scratching your head, thinking, how do we tackle it? And at this moment in time, Pete, I don't know how to sort of structure that documentary other than look at sort of the main areas. I mean, the sort of the blood ritual sort of stuff has been covered very intensely by David anyway. So that area of it, I'll probably leave alone. And a lot of that's pretty dark anyway, so I don't need... there's not much room for any more darkness in currently with me. Because
you've probably attracted enough on some level too.
Yeah, well, when you're looking into the New World, all the Illuminati stuff, all that's more of that, but that's why it does connect. You know, you look down that route and you see what they're doing, and you know that there's something else. Mm. And then, you know, this gets into the djinn, doesn't it? The whole djinn. And then you come into the sort of using Christianity here as the demon element and the Satan element. All that ties in. So there's that whole argument as well. That I get a lot of that. I get contacted by Christians as well, saying, you know, this is not this, it's this. Cool, it may well be. I don't know what it is. And I'm pretty sure that you don't know what it is either. So let's not argue about it. Let's just have a look at it. And all right, I probably won't come up with any conclusions about the shape shifting. But what I'm trying to do is, there is some science in it. We are doing a lot of videoing. We're doing some visual work. We're doing a lot of video experiments with different cameras to see if something is happening and using various cameras. Is it something to do with the photons traveling from the light, you know, to the camera, to the sensor on the camera? Is that allowing us to capture something in the environment that's there? Now, Richard Bruce, who does the shape-shifting analysis, he calls it demonic indwelling. Now, with him being a Christian, I suppose that's a better terminology that suits how he sees things.
Yeah, yeah.
But it still fits, and it still describes what people are seeing very well. And especially when you speak to and you look at Bill Bean. I don't know whether you're familiar with Bill Bean's work in America. He's sort of a... he's not an exorcist, but it's similar to that. And he's had a lot of experiences, but he totally acknowledges aliens and ufology and all the rest of it, and he knows that it's connected. He knows that that is connected with this demonic element, and the aliens are connected somehow. And we don't know what that is. And I think shape-shifting is just one of those areas that looks at that connection and analyses it. And you can look into the old texts as well for all of this, you know, sort of, as you mentioned earlier. That describe this, particularly like the Emeralds of Toth. There's a part in there that describes a certain word that can be said. I don't know, have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's something like the time in the Atlantean times, there would be the way that they identified the men that were possessed or would come in disguise is by saying a word, Kininigan. And if they could pronounce the word Kininigan, then they would have to reveal themselves. It's written in the text that if they can say this word. If you say, I mean, there's two sort of views that if the men in the sort of council, if you like, wanted to identify and look at people's worth, they would either say it to reveal them or they would make the person say Kininigan to see if they revealed themselves to be a serpent. That's the bones of it. So that's a very interesting area. So you can imagine there's all that to sort of go into, and then you've got the whole issue with the emerald tablets themselves, which are another phenomenon and a mystery. So when you start quoting from things like that, I mean, you're all right. You quote from the Bible, you're perfectly fine. When you quote from the Emeralds of Toth or a book thrown out of the Bible, you know, then there's
different
an issue.
Matter, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I've been going on for a bit long now, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah,
So the whole shape-shifting thing is just, again, it's just another film that's come off the back of this reptilian stuff. But another researcher that you know, in fact, I think you put me on to Mary Rodwell.
Yeah.
How can you do this documentary about the alien agenda without speaking to Mary? So it can't be done. And although Mary's got a very different perspective on it, it's a perspective that's worth its weight in gold, really, because it's really important that you cover those angles. If you're not covering those angles, then you're not doing it justice, as far as I'm concerned. And some people have said, oh, well, you know, you should be careful with people that are into that benevolent stuff and a positive outcome. And that is a bizarre thing to say. What are you saying? So what should we be hoping for here? Like the end of the world? Is this what we... because it's looking like what you're projecting, you're going to get.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, yeah.
So if you're feeling that way about it, that's possibly what you're putting out. I mean, I know that sounds very... especially coming from a researcher, or not even a researcher, really, a filmmaker. But if you think a certain way, you create, if your consciousness is creating this sort of thing, when I hear people say that, because I have no experiences like yourself, to me, it doesn't know, but at the time, it sounded like a lot of fluff. This is just a lot of fluff. I don't even actually understand a lot of the terminology that you're coming out with. Then when you look at it and you research it, and even your own mood, and throughout this film, people have asked me and have warned me to be cautious about your own mood, your own thoughts, which direction you're going in. And there have been times when I've thought, you know, this is weird. This is not necessarily behaving like myself, or I was getting. There was a time during last year that I was really down and like under the weather. And a lot of people put that down to stress. I'm working a bit too much. But it was more than that. I don't know what it was. I can't put my finger on what it was. But a lot of people have said, oh, you've been psychically attacked. But I don't know anything about psychic attacks. I wouldn't know one if it thumped me in the face. But all I can describe it as is a very unusual period of time, like 2, 3, 4 weeks of just sort of being demotivated with it. You know, just fell out with the whole thing. For a period of time and didn't really want anything to do with it. But I don't know what that was, but, you know, just because someone covers a more benevolent area of research and is actually speaking to experiences, kids, you know, that are talking about their own direct experiences, that's really important and it has to be covered. So Mary was sort of like one of the key people to speak to in regards to that and had a lot of, you know, very interesting things to say that I couldn't necessarily cover in part one, but we're going to look at more in part two and three. And David Chase is another researcher that looks at the benevolent experiences. He's been around this a long time, particularly reptilian research for a long time. And he was another one, very cautious about what my angle was.
Mm-hmm.
And David's seen part one and said, yeah, I was happy with it. I know that you had to go down that darker route first. But I know where you're going. So he was quite pleased with the outcome. I mean, he's been fortunate enough that he's in America and he can see that the dock, which a lot of people in Europe and Australia and Asia can't see that yet. But covering the sort of benevolent experiences was key. And then I think you've got James Rink as well, the super soldier angle. I mean, you know, that's another documentary, isn't it? That's probably all done, but there's a lot of stuff on YouTube about the super soldier My Lab stuff. Did you have any at My Labs, Pete? Do you remember any of those experiences like that?
There is, to the point where I've been some places and there's been military, and I've actually had military contact me as well, so there is that component. But I think what I've learned from my experiences is it's almost like a double spy thing that you incarnate to have this experience, and they know about it, and then they try to somehow, whether they try to manipulate you or indoctrinate you into their program, whatever it is, they think they've got you under wraps, but really you're still spying for upstairs. Now, not saying that's the case with me, I don't know. I've been taken to facilities that are I don't know what, and there's been military personnel there, there's been reptilians, there's been greys there, but at the same time, with my experiences, I've started learning out more about my higher self before here, in terms of another aspect of myself that's incarnated here to experience that, and people will go, well, why couldn't the aliens or beings just do this and that? And what people don't think about is that the military or my lab have alien technology, which is almost able to block out certain types of surveillance from other advanced cultures because they're using multidimensional technology.
Yeah.
It's almost like right now I can't do anything within this home, so I could be getting surveillance, whether it's wispy stuff walking around me or, you know, interdimensional technology or even high advanced military technology. But if I've got technology to block that out, they're going to need another level of technology to be able to penetrate that. So yeah. I've had experiences which are, I'd say, my lab based, but it hasn't got the better of me. And it really, I don't think they know what to do with me from what I've been told, because it's what they've tried to do to me hasn't worked like it has on other people. I don't know why that is. But I'm a lot more connected with who I am on a multidimensional level than a lot of other people, which I know the power that I've got, just like you've got and anyone else has got, but they don't realise that unless they've got a connection with that. And refining that connection is part of the journey in the tough times to make you to be able to handle what you're here to do. Because, you know, if this was all, you know, easy, we wouldn't even be having this conversation, you know. And if we all knew what was going on, we still wouldn't be talking about this. Because there would be no point to it.
Well, the MyLab angle is really interesting, because I was contacted. Someone came across the fact that I was putting the Reptilian Conference on here in the UK, and mainstream press got in touch, and they just rang me up and said, "Look, Chris, can we do an article on it?" So we started having this conversation. You know how this thing works. She's expecting a really simple explanation about aliens in spaceships. Once I started getting into it, not only did I find that she wanted to know more and became really interested, but when I started to sort of explain briefly, you know, basically the military's involvement in this, what little I know about it, that just totally blew her mind. She just could not get her head around the fact that there are multiple factions working with and against each other. And that actually is one of the areas that I hadn't even considered at the beginning of this, because that's not something you hear. And when Mary was talking about the program Life Forms as well, the created life forms that the military create and have the technology to build now, it just knocked her for six.
And that's what I was showing, was that some of these beings I've interacted with were military created.
Yeah. And that is, I mean, how do you research that? I mean, it's much... Like much of this, it's sort of all you can do is speak to the experiences and let them tell you what they've seen, and then, like Mary's doing, correlate the information, like other people like Mary and other researchers are doing the same. And that's all you can do. And by covering the MyLabs, of course, you get that, and you get there's a very sinister side to that, where people are having sort of very traumatic experiences, and then other people aren't.
Yeah.
And like you saw, it's really strange how those experiences differ so massively.
Yeah.
What is that? What is the difference? Is it a DNA thing? What is it that's doing that? And I think as a researcher, there comes a point when you're looking into this where you have to say, all right, what is special about such a guy, and why is he having the experience? Because I was contacted. I usually get probably one every month, one or two a month saying, you need to try and make contact yourself. That's where you'll get to the truth. And I'm thinking, well, I don't think I want to do that. You should be doing mushrooms, or you should do ayahuasca, or you should do something like this. And from my experience, from the research that people I've spoke to, that's the last thing that I should be doing. It's not necessary at this time, at this moment in time, it isn't necessary. The only, I guess, probably now would be a good time to talk about that experience from the Isle of Wight.
Yeah.
You
left David Icke's. This happened after that.
Yeah, we did the interview at the weekend. I came home and my wife and my daughter were away on holiday. And I'd only been in the house 10 minutes. So I got on the laptop straight away to check the emails that had been away. And I was sat with a laptop on my knee. And I looked up, and right in front of me at the far end near the TV in the living room was this yellow wall.
The microphone's done it again.
Has it done it again?
Yeah, I'll call you straight back, all right?
Right, okay.
There we go. I've got this recording again. So, all right, continue on, please.
I'll go. Excuse me. Okay, so I guess now would be probably a good time to talk about the experience with David back from the Isle of Wight. So I got home from the Isle of Wight after interviewing him. And I was sat at the laptop checking the emails, and when I looked up, there was this yellow orb about the size of my fist near the TV in the living room, and it appeared at first like you would. I mean, you're probably familiar with all that kind of stuff now, but the first thing you do is from looking up from a bright screen, I thought, oh, this is a reaction. This is my eyes with the light. So I looked again, and you give your eyes a wipe just to make sure that you've not got anything in your eye. And the thing appeared again, only for a couple of seconds. No, not even a second even. But it was something in the room, yellow, a yellow orb that I can't explain what that was. That's sort of the only experience that I've had. I mean, I think I saw back with my, I've got a son, but back with my son's mother back probably 20, how old's my son, 18? Probably, yeah, about 18 years ago we saw a UFO. That was over a busy, we were in a shopping centre. And this shopping centre was situated sort of like in the middle of quite a rural location, really. And we sort of looked above the buildings in this shopping centre. And over the hills was a craft, just over the hills. And then just like that, it was gone. And I looked at Victoria, sort of my partner at the time, and I said, "Did you see that?" And she saw it. So that's another sort of little a brief glimpse of something, whether that was, it did look like a helicopter, and obviously you would hear a helicopter, and it was not too far away, you know, it was near enough to see, but it wasn't, you know, anything that I'd seen before. But it, again, it was just something that appeared for such a brief period of time that you are always questioning, or I do anyway, what I've actually seen. So that yellow orb was just really strange, just floating, disappeared, appeared again. And I've never seen it since. But it was just odd that it would appear of all the times when I'm in home alone, so to speak, and I'd just been speaking to David Icke. Whether that's related or not, I don't know. And I still don't know what it actually was. I don't know whether it is an issue with my eyes. I can't explain what I saw. But there, other than that, that's what I saw. That's just, have you ever seen, I know you see a lot of orbs, but a yellow in particular. Have you seen anything like that?
I've seen yellow, I've seen blue, I've seen red, green. Everything's different, slightly different, but like you start out, like I started off thinking, you know, there was this one particular being or race I was interacting with, and then all of a sudden something else is in the picture and something else is coming into the picture, and I've got no idea with how much things, beings, intelligences I've interacted with now, and this is just what happens with it. But there's always a, you'll know if something's not in line with your higher school when you experience it, and you'll know that either if you don't know what the hell is going on, but on a cool nature, or if you get blissed out, well, it's something else. And then you've got other intelligences that if you feed fear, it's going to give you fear. And if you're cool with it, you're going to get a cool experience, which are like, I guess, maybe trickster type mentality. They don't care. So, you know, these are the types of things. But some of the yellow stuff I've experienced is, it hasn't been negative for myself.
I think it was you actually that said to me, I think I contacted you. I don't know that it was you. And I asked and you said, how did you feel about it? And I didn't feel anything about it. Yeah. I didn't feel a negative vibe from it at all. It was gone so fast that I guess I didn't really have time to feel any way about it, and still now don't really feel anything about it. So yeah, I mean, that's what I've been told, sort of go off how you feel about these things, go off your gut, and that's what I've sort of realized over the making of this film. I mean, Daniel, who's the co-producer of the film, he works like that anyway. He's very sort of spiritual. He's studied Qigong for a long time, like 20 years. So he's very familiar with the way he works on frequency and how things feel. And if he feels something's off, he's out of there straight away. If we come in contact with a person that he doesn't like, he won't even give us he's really blunt like that. He'll just say, I'm out of here. We're going. And he'll just get up and leave. Whereas I'd be sort of, that's a bit rude. He's just out. He's out of there. And I think that's sort of my naivety around this stuff is dispersing pretty quick. Because if you can't let that... Once you figure out that it's all frequency related and consciousness related, whatever that might be, I mean, that's another word that people throw about consciousness a lot. And some people on the fringe don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't get it. So when someone doesn't get it, it doesn't matter how you try and describe that word or that what that is. They're just not going to get it. So I've just got to accept now that some people are just not ready to take this on. And I'm hoping that the film, when the series is complete, will open a few doors for people and maybe put people onto people's research like yourself, or whether it be Mary's work, or the people that are entrenched in the darkest side of this conspiracy, for want of a better word, this agenda, rather, is a better word. Because it's very easy to get... Hollywood has sort of made it sexy, haven't they? The sort of sensational side of alien research is, the darker it is and the deeper it is, the more interesting it is. And I think they've done a pretty good job of that. And but it's backfired in a sense, hasn't it? Because people like myself are then go, well, there has to be an opposite of this. Mm-hmm. So now I'm going to go and have a look at that. And I don't think a lot of people get stuck in that zone, of that darkness that does actually need and is very difficult to research.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're certainly going to stop you trying to research that field more than they're going to stop you researching the benevolent stuff. Because it seems that I'd say less people want to accept. I thought it was the other way around at first, Pete, because although the dark stuff is sort of sensationalist and interesting and people can accept it because it's actually on the doorstep a lot of it, isn't it? You can sort of see what's going on in mainstream. You can see the sort of crime and corruption and bad politics and health is another one that's massive in this whole thing, and it's all connected. Science and medicine. I think people can't take on, once they've took on that darker stuff, you find it very difficult to take on the benevolent stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like something in them that will not accept it. And then you see it on the forums, whenever if I post in the forum or I post a comment, you see that immediate response. The comment's only been there 3 seconds. There's a reply. Oh, you're a loving light idiot or whatever. Yeah. It's like, well, mate, have you tried it? Have you looked at it? And they won't even acknowledge that they've looked at it because it takes time to look at it. They've been looking at the dark stuff for 10 years, haven't they? Reading David Icke's books for 10 years, but can't spur 2 weeks to look outside of that. And it's interesting that some of the researchers that I looked into, like one of the guys that made... Are you familiar with Alex Colley's work?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, not really. I've seen him in a couple of videos. I think talks he's done.
Yeah, I got in touch with Alex, and he was having a difficult time at that particular the time that I contacted him. He wasn't able to be in the film, but that interview that he did, I can't remember the guy's name now. But I contacted him, and he said, "Look, I spent a long time looking at," and Alex is the same, the dark side of this agenda, and now I stay really clear of it. And I'm sort of moving into a more positive area because I understand where I need to be personally to sort of come to the truth. If that's probably not the right word, but I think you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think until people are going to scoff at that side of the documentary. I know they are, but I know that there are a lot of people that are going to appreciate. And ultimately, all I'm doing is presenting people's experiences that talk about the lighter side of what's going on. And in the end, that's all anyone who's serious about putting the truth out, if they're not doing that, then there's probably something amiss. Definitely. That's what I've learned.
No, definitely. And my experiences have been two-folded. Same with reptilians. I had experiences that were okay and some that just weren't. And I've got to tell it like it is, and that's just how it was. So this is where... Not everything's love and light, but not everything's dark either. And it is what it is. And again, it's up for people to make their mind up about it. And I don't think people can make a decision either way unless they've experienced it or they're informed. And
yeah,
there's a lot to get yourself informed, and even when the experience, there's a hell of a lot to take into account.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you're right. To get informed, you've got to commit to it. I mean, I committed to it because I was up to my neck in it. I had to commit to it. Once that sort of first film was cut to 90 minutes, I had no choice but reevaluate everything that I'd come across. So I was sort of forced down that route, if you like. The distributor actually did me a favour, and I think it did the film a favour, long term, that it would be a much better production and contain a much bigger body of evidence than it would have done. But also through the film, and you did some interviewing of James Gilliland for the Anunnaki film that I'm working on. And that's another thing that sort of connected me. Like, before the Reptilian movie came about, we were doing research on the Anunnaki. And then once we got into the Reptilian stuff, for whatever reason, it sort of took over. But there has always been that connection with it. And when, I mean, you talk about the Elohim.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, we know that that connection is there. And it was only when James Gilliland sort of said in his interview with us for us that they have had contact with the Reptilians, and I suspected for a long time that there is a connection here, because we looked at Kreda Mutwa's, the Zulu shaman, his story about the two brothers, the Chitahuri brothers, and then you've got the Anunnaki brothers, Enki and Enlil. Now, this story is identical, but yet we've got a reptilian bunch of guys, and we've got sort of a humanoid bunch of guys. So that's another one, that argument that rages until the cows come on. It just goes on and on. They're reptilian. No, they're not reptilian. Yes, they are. No, they're not. And that, until, who's looking at, you can't just look at this evidence. You need to be looking at this and speaking to the right people. And some people just won't. And it's the same. I mean, I'm relatively new to this whole, the old ufology sort of area of stuff, but even after a couple of years, I can see that there are factions within the movement sort of fighting against each other.
Oh, mate, the ufology field, I've got some fantastic mates that I've met through doing what I do, but some of these people will eat their young.
Yeah.
And they've been researching it for 20 years, and you cannot voice your experience because it goes against what they've been told. And a large percentage of the time, they've never had an experience, they have really. Or I'll pull them privately aside and go, mate, you can't bullcrap me, because the only reason you're doing this is, one, you've got a needing to do it like you do personally, like you've always been interested, or number two, you've had an experience and you haven't got the balls to talk about it. So what you've done is put the front on as a researcher and kept that hat on and kept your experiences quiet because you want to investigate it. But it is frustrating, because that's exactly what's going on. There is these factions within factions.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I really wasn't expecting it. I wasn't expecting to come up against so much they're really bitter, actually. There's a lot of bitterness there. And I guess when you have invested 20 years of your life looking into an area of research, and someone comes along and says, well, wait a minute, what about this side of it? Of course, that's going to be a huge consideration there, and they're going to have to make a choice. Do I stick to my guns, or do I say, okay, the last few years I've probably been a bit closed-minded, and like you said, once ego by then is set in, and they just will not allow themselves to open up to it. And I wasn't prepared for that. I'm still surprised by it now. And I think it's somewhere along the line in the film, we're probably going to acknowledge that in some way.
I just want everyone to work together. And I've had other researchers come up to me and go, Pete, why can't we just all work together? And when I started going public in 2010, it was 2010, I thought everyone was working together. And then I realised after a year or two, it wasn't like that. And like, my advice to people is now, I wish we were working together, and I want to work with everyone. But the problem is, it's just not the situation. And, you know, as soon as people realise that and just stick to their truth and stick to their guns and present it with, you know, truth, integrity, and, you know, and you know, doing this while they got into it, in terms of, look, I've experienced a hell of a lot, and I don't even know 0.0001 out of a billion percent of what's going on. But what I know is a hell of a lot compared to the average person, but I don't know what's going on. Like, my experiences, and I think I talked a bit about it for the Anunnaki doco, was my understanding is that the Archons and the Elohim Anunnaki, they're the same thing, but they evolve differently. And the Archons overshadow the reptilians, and there's an artificial intelligence which is basically like the monitor of keeping this frequency so they can do what they're doing. I'm still trying to absorb that and the Book of Shiji that I've done, because even though I've been a vehicle for that, I still am trying to absorb it. And I'm the one that's experiencing this, so there's no way I don't think anybody can say they know what the hell is going on, because I've got a lot of evidence and witnesses and stuff, and I'm just trying to absorb it. So this is why it's great that you're getting a little bit of everyone, and that's what you've done, is you've covered the whole gamut. Whether, you know, it's an experience, a research, a positive, negative, you've done that.
I think like you said, I think what it will do is, hopefully, is lead people down areas of research that they wouldn't necessarily have looked at. I mean, I've had a lot of emails talking, a lot of stuff, a lot of people go to your stuff. I think it's probably because of your channel as well.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have asked about Ellis. Now, I think with Ellis...
I'll just pause it quickly. It's done. The mic's gone again. It's obviously something on the connection, but I'll just call you straight back. And here we go. I'm back again. Sorry, mate.
I forgot. I've lost the train of thought then.
Something about Ellis you were about to say.
Yeah, I think a lot of people got onto Ellis's research from just a few excerpts and the documentary that I put up on my channel. And I think Ellis came across really well, despite, you know, saying people knowing very little about him. So I think that the sort of genuine side of people like yourself and Ellis, I think people who were looking into reptilian stuff, probably not used to coming across someone speaking about an experience that is slightly different. Because a lot of the time people can put a label on an experience, can't they? That's what I've found. They can either label it good or bad. But yourself included in Alice's experiences, a lot of them are sort of in between. You're still sort of figuring out, all right, what was the intention? Why did I see that? Or what does he want? He's not, you know, I don't feel anything about it, but what's the intention behind that? And there's still a lot, people are going to have to accept that there's still a lot of things that we don't know. And I guess I accept that this film, the series of docs, or anything I do, or anything anyone does, it isn't saying anything. It's just presenting stuff, an angle, shall we say. It's just presenting an angle or multiple angles that perhaps you haven't looked at. And that's all anyone can do.
I think it will leave people more informed, but with more questions, because they're more informed. And that's what I've learned, is the more I've experienced, the more I realise in this body computer, I think in other states, I think we all know it all on another level. But I think during the human experience, it'll be something where we go, all right, a lot more questions I've got now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're totally right, because I guess, how does anyone research this stuff, the likes of Jordan Maxwell and Ike, for 30, 40 years or whatever it is? Of course you get more and more questions, and I think that's one of the downsides of any topic, I guess, in this sort of conspiracy, that we're all after a definitive answer, aren't we? And it's difficult to accept that you're not going to get it.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get it. Just accept it. And if it stops you wanting to look deeper, then that's your call. Yeah. You know, you're entitled to do that. But while the rest of us are, you know, continue on, just leave us to it. You know, and don't send me nasty emails, or, you know, accuse me of being, you know, a troll or a shill or any of the other names that we've all been called at one time or another, I guess. So, and that's a key point, actually. I should probably raise that now, about... That's another thing I wasn't familiar with. I didn't, naively, I couldn't grasp that there would be people in the movement deliberately put in the movement. that work for the agencies, the alphabet agencies, that are deliberately trying to misinform and disinform everybody. I mean, of course it makes perfect sense that they're going to do that, but when you, again, when you're out on the, when you're looking outside in, you don't expect that. Mm. You just don't expect such a huge mass of intelligence, because I think at the beginning there was one or two, you know, sections of agencies deliberately doing this sort of thing, putting disinformation out. Now, with social media and the, you know, the success of it and the popularity of it, I mean, it, they must be rubbing their hands together, just putting piles of just nonsense out there for us to just eat up. And it does eat up a lot of your time trying to get through it. And you can spend a lot of time researching someone and then find out that this guy works for, you know, an agency or has been paid by an agency or whatever. Because that does happen.
Yeah.
There are people that have been genuinely found out in the movement. So, yeah, now I'm familiar with that. Just another reason to be more paranoid, I guess.
It is. And like we were saying before we started the show, the setup of how this is being done by the powers that be on the other side, like I say to people, I don't blame them if they don't believe a word we've got to say or even look into it, because it's been that well put in place. It's not like something 100 years ago they decided to cover this up that well. It's like they knew thousands of years ago that how society was going to, or this current part of civilization, this time around, that where things were going to happen in a timeline. So therefore they could plan how to make things look the way to benefit them, you know? And no wonder we sound nuts. But again, it's a two-edged sword, especially with today's technology. You know, a lot of things are found out, especially what's going on, whether it's wars or things in the Middle East or whatever. With the technology of a mobile phone today, somebody that didn't have access to get the word out, you know, 20 years ago, now at a push of a button can tweet something or whatever.
Yeah, and even that, you know, has had somewhat of a negative effect as well, because with the, I mean, I work in visual effects, and when I see something that's been animated, or you know, it is a visual effect, that something has been done in Photoshop or in After Effects or Nuke.
Exactly.
I can spot that a mile off, and I know what they're doing. And that's another thing that has made me scratch my head a lot. It's just like, why are you doing that? I mean, yeah, people are paid to do that, some of, but there are people out there just doing it for the fun of it. And I'm just thinking, mate, don't do that. Why, you know, spend your time. If you've got a lot of time on your hands, do something, you know, useful with
it. Not that. Yeah,
it baffles me why they would do that. Maybe get a job in TV if you want to do that.
Yeah. Again, that's the two-edged sword of everything that's going on. Just like what we're talking about, there's the positive and the negative of it. But look, we'll wrap it up here at the moment. I'd love to get you back on sometime and go further into this, because you do have a lot of projects on the way. You've still got part two and part three being done as well, and that to come out as well. It's such a large volume of interviews and work that you've got to put together. I think a lot of people are going to be impressed, and it's going to be like a very informative package, because you cover different angles. It's not just a set preconceived notion that you follow.
Yeah, well, I think the advice I would give is, with part one, is that it is sort of a 101, Reptilian 101, and it does... We sort of speak to everybody. So it sort of lays out the research that various people that like yourself have been doing, and experiences have been at, the experiences people have been having, which is key, which is really important. It's not just some guy that's been studying this for 25 years. These are experiences. But also with the first film, I'll be putting stuff out there on my channel that came from the same people that won't necessarily make the film, but it's all connected, if that makes sense. Everything that we speak about is connected to this. It's just not necessarily being able to be put into the edit due to the time limit. Even though I've got three films, that's only, 3 hours, four and a half, 5 hours of work. I've got 50 hours of footage plus
and more to come.
So there'll be plenty of stuff going up there, you know, once I've taken from it and I'm left with it. There'll be free stuff going up there, you know, proper documentaries that I'll just piece together for people to make of what they will. Anything that's useful, really. So I would advise them to watch that and go away and look at your separate stuff and James's separate and so on and so on. Everyone that's in the film, go and look at the stuff that they're doing, because I know a lot of people won't necessarily have tied you guys into reptilians per se, and it's not necessarily what you guys do, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's important and it's connected, as I found out after 2 years looking into it.
It's all linked in together. Well, we'll wrap it up there, mate, and there'll be a link down to, I'll put it through to the reptilian website that we've got, Repcon and everything. Do you want to tell everyone about that quickly?
Yeah, I'm organising a conference here in the UK that's in Bury, which is in Greater Manchester, and it's Repcon seemed like a sensible thing to call it. I probably could have called it something different, but I guess that anyone familiar with the work I'm doing knows what it's all about. And as I've learned, it's not just reptilians, it's UFOs, it's aliens, it's corruption, it's djinn, the djinn, demons, you name it. It's just everything pretty much that would be covered in your typical UFO conference. It's just called Repcon. And in the first Repcon, which takes place in May of this year, May the 29th, it is specifically a sort of reptilian related stuff. We're hoping, we don't know how well the event's going to go, but we've got some great speakers, James Bartley, Ellis Taylor, Max Spears and Simon Parks, which is, I think a lot of people will be familiar with Simon's work. So if you're in the UK and you're free, come along and get a ticket and see what it's all about. So it should be amazing, really. I've had some really good feedback. Even mainstream press have touched it. They're interested in what it's all about. Whether they'll how we're going to get represented is anyone's guess. But ultimately, it's good that they're actually paying attention to it. So that's cool.
Awesome stuff. Well, we'll wrap it up there. And thanks a lot for taking the time to come on. And we'll get you back on in time.
No worries. Thanks, Pete. I appreciate that, mate.
Thanks a lot, mate. Cheers.
Bye, mate. See you soon.